Hey, thanks all of you for coming out. It's great to see you all. And thank you, Joan, for asking me. And Chris, what a great addition Chris has been with his terrific introductions. They've really been nice. And of course, Dawn for giving us a history of ourselves. And I can't thank Tony enough for first raising the bar too high with the poetry of Jimmy and also pointing out that I am naked against his bullshit detectors. I also was a big fan of Jimmy's. I remember reading early on and him telling me afterwards, he said, "You got to go stronger, you got to go harder, you got to go deeper, let it go, let her rip." And, you know, it's hard to let her rip against, you know, he had that kind of life. I thought maybe I would do some transgressive stuff, but transgressive to me is, you know, is not nearly what it is transgressive to Jimmy. But I want to start off with the title poem of this this collection, Irish Coffee. I have some Irish friends in the audience, and this is for them also. He sits with me at breakfast and tells the horrifying story about his brothers drinking and stealing, arrested with his saliva still staining the rifle barrel. For we are Irish, dreamy stallions with bloodlines that take us back to lost races, to the knowledge that sooner or later the world will break our hearts. For we know the world of dreams far better than is good. We know its whiskey surge, how it gathers to unleash the wizard of our heart's tongue in a patriot game, or loss on the water lapping at Innisfree. I want to be horrified by his brother's excesses, express sympathetic disgust, but I am envious of his plans. Take, shoot, run. After my breakfast, I lift coffee for a sip, already planning another before it chills. I also have a poem here about a different kind of addiction called, I want to point out that these things are not biographical or autobiographical. This is called Peep Show, an Addict Song. Well-hung neon wall tubes, embarrassed red, withered yellow, call out live nude models as if we wouldn't look at a dead one. In childhood, I hope for kitchen sweetness, expecting always, even alone, the peach pie, despite these dirty hands surety, a filthy biscuit bite. I have cooked up and spit out tales of the sweetness of tasted peaches, telling of the grab and circumference of bouncy, cheesy rounds bought, watched, and held down below me, but that I could never have any more than the ineffable crumbling crust, infinity of a loving baker's touch, that I search for in every shop. In this salmon light, I run out of time. Models changed five times daily to scour off my pressure cooking gaze. Thank you, you sweethearts. This is a little thinking about transgressions and trying to think of Jimmy and all the ones he's had is a hard task. But I remember some of the early trouble I ran into. This is called Good Friday. Sometimes we think of religion as getting us out of these things, and sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. Good Friday. The smoky spring morning reminds me of fall, heartbreaking in its promise and surety of end. It was Good Friday, before Jesus' inheritance, when it was all on the come. His bet and belief way back then, and mine, that it would be okay, even though I was 19 and mostly wondering the oxygen of women and why my miracles always tasted of bourbon. One latest busy question, why stop at red lights? I dealt the traffic tickets in a semicircle on my brother's kitchen table like blasphemous apostles. While he finished the cigar, he had lit at the police station for our confidence. 8 stop signs, 3 stop lights, and a weak little too fast for conditions. Two screaming days later, I dutifully drove them and a sack of dollars out of my parents' house downtown to the fixer, my uncle, who got sober with Blackie Riley. Really? If you had only come to me sooner, I'd date the secretary. Could have stopped it right there, free. But now I'll have to deal with the Greek, and believe me, it will cost. All that help, and they're all dead. After the moth flies and the rust corrupts, we really are all a better family. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I deal with... I'm so proud to be reading with these readers tonight. They're all astonishing. I've been lucky enough to read with Sharon before and John, so I'm delighted to be among this group as well as be with you tonight. Many of the people that I read with, my fellow poets, have a wonderful grasp of flora and fauna, and they paint beautiful pictures of the natural world. That is not in my skill set. This is called Creative Writing 909. What the fuck's a crocus? or a lark at evensong at vespers? Do they rhyme with myasthenia gravis, stark, or nightmares like those my wife suffers from? Are they found in the sepulchral corridors of hospitals, the identical plush columned coffin interiors of doctors' offices? I don't know how to attach only a delicate gilt or organdy edge to this life. I can't name one thing made of alabaster. But sometimes there is a little relief from all this difficulty. This is a love poem. I don't write very many of these. This is for Judy. Spring fishing. Do you pace your longing, time the yearning, so that you don't run out of fennel crust before the salmon, you before desire? You cannot outlast your desire, especially if you're walking in a snow-sparkling field, wondering how her hand can be so warm and small at the same time, how it fits yours and then wriggles into your pocket like a hot minnow. It can't happen if she breaks your disciplined line with her laugh, almost silent, but swims into your heart. Or if you finally hook her, maybe with song lines or rock group names, Echo and the Bunny Men. I've been thinking about my doorbell. Why ain't you ringing it? Why ain't you ringing it? Or when you can't wait for the summer season. Thank you. The ultimate transgression, of course, is war. And I wrote this a while back for Hitler. It's called V2. Hitler put all his faith in the V2 rocket, the first to be used in wartime. Eyes burning, he said he wanted to annihilate V, not for victory, but vengeance. So easy to see his stupidity, meanness, hatred, trying to wipe out the Jews, gypsies, Slavs, 50 million, including 2 of my uncles. And my son learned in L.A. that the sweet little bodega, Mexican or Asian, is a myth. I was recently remembering that I arranged an abortion for a woman I hardly knew and voted for a war for which maybe we all should go to Nuremberg. This is not the story of a surely aimed missile, rather of a circling vulture, the remedy for which is always too late, too wrong. Like the supplies to surrounded German troops at Stalingrad, one plane filled with black pepper and 12 cases of condoms.
Wow.
Okay. And this transgression speaks for itself. It's called Hemispheres. It was winter in Argentina, and everyone in Buenos Aires was coughing. On La Roca Street, it was cold. Even when touching on the whore's couch, those two with their tattoos, the charming roses could bloom forever. one small bud on the shoulder down, and one with a thorn up on the thigh. Back in Appalachia's late fall, my love takes us to concerts at night. Her breasts above me, she explains the music as she explained her forest's latest colors. When I don't get it, her face comes close, like my doctor's, who, when asked about the origin of a recurring fungus, insists, "It's inside you." Oh, you don't get off that easily. This is my own part in transgressive life called Luminary. Just in case you think I got screwed up only recently, see, nobody does. Let me tell you about the fire. My wife in those days was a candle maker as well as a crazy maker. Like many artists, just good enough to be impossible. We were having a big drinks party to celebrate Christ's birth, although he wouldn't be coming or mentioned. But the wine, much advertised in his bio, would be plentiful, and candles, lots of candles to celebrate my wife's talent and for atmosphere. We lit the hell out of the place and ourselves. Drink up was the last thing I heard, but I woke up in time to douse out the growing flames and to sleep in throat-coating carbon, back to back in bed, silently blaming the negligent one. Did I tell you we had a four-year-old, a boy so tender, he unexpectedly kissed my hand in the park one day? This is Mike, thank you. My co-conspirator in a lot of my trouble was my brother. This is for him. It's called Michael. My brother was a tough customer. Once confronting a sympathetic friend who said, after our mother's long illness and death, "Maybe it was for the best." Michael growled, "Maybe it wasn't." He once drank away a few hours with Lee Marvin and complained that Lee was unpleasant and obstreperous. I recounted this to the same friend who answered, "What did Lee say?" But he was Michael the Archangel to me when I was out of money or friends or full of enemies, one of whom was a big eighth grade paper boy when I was in fourth and who caught me in a garage and roughed me up pretty good. On his route with a load of papers on his head, he wasn't tough enough to scare Michael, who socked him so hard papers flew like peace doves all over Fifth Avenue. I could never return such a favor. When death came after him, I could only buy his favorite flowers for the funeral. Years before, Michael bought a mountain cottage and immediately gave me a key. One Saturday, we planted daffodils all day, which I can still glimpse, blazing as I drive by on Route 22 these many years later. And finally, this is the only hopeful thing I have to say tonight. it's called eschatology. I once wowed a professor of mine by knowing what eschatology meant, the study of last things. It's a final survey of sorts. Suppose God is unsure and wants to know how creation worked out. Who better to ask than us? I imagine a purgatory. Hey, this will be taxing and painful work, most suitable for the transgressive. There, the most discerning, the critics among us, will be met as we struggle creakily out of the needles and pins and hot pokers or whatever else makes up our punishments. Yes, he will be a he with a white beard so as not to shock us, and will say, as at the exit of a new amusement park, something like, "How was it? How'd you like the ride? Would you take a minute?" Rhetorical, because what else are we going to do? And fill out this brief survey, which of course won't be brief because it was one long trip, and hello, we're in eternity. I'm afraid I don't have time to reproduce all my suggested possible questions, but a few are below. One, you know, the usual demographic stuff. How old are you? Where were you born? How mean was your mom or dad? Please circle which was meaner. Two, on a scale of 1 to 22,000, with 700,650 being the best you humans could appreciate, how would you rate your life? Three, on the same scale, how do you rate policy number 1297B, the so-called nature red in tooth and claw policy? Note if you've had any personal experience with the policy. No metaphors, please. Four, how'd you like the horse, or the way I filigreed the fall breeze through those trees? I think you call maple reds. Thank you.